Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Sheila's arrested on B&B, The Devil is Gone on Days, Josh Kelly joins GH, and Mariah and Tess get married on Y&R. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Carly Silver, welcome.
Good morning.
Michael Jubinville, welcome.
Good morning.
And Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, Lucas.
Well, a lot to talk about in soaps. I have a feeling that Days of Our Lives is going to take up the most amount of time because so much took place. So we'll save that one for last. Let's kick things off with The Bold and the Beautiful. Mike, what did you think of Sheila's arrest and her confrontation with Brooke?
Well, I have to say that Kimberlyn Brown is really, really owning the depth and soul of Sheila, because when you watch her at certain times, you can just see that old character come out. I like the scenes with Steffi and Taylor and Ridge and Sheila, and I kind of thought that they were confronting her again without any kind of cause or... So it was kind of a nice thing, a nice surprise to have the cops there and arrest her and have Steffi wearing a wire. My only real little complaint about it is that it was missing other people. I mean, this was a big dramatic moment, climax of a huge story. And, you know, other people like Brooke or Deacon or Thomas, Lee,
yes,
and Jack, just not really involved in any of it. And it was really all about Steffi, which obviously it should be because she's now widowed, the widow Steffi. But
the widow Forrester.
Though
she's not a Forrester,
she's,
I guess.
The widow Finnegan.
Yeah, the widow. Ooh, that actually sounds like a really good, like, murder mystery type thing. The widow
it does,
Finnegan.
But that would require a little more
where
intrigue.
I stand. Okay. And I like the thing with the confrontation in the jail was, I did laugh when Sheila said, "This isn't about Steffi. This is about you. And I'm not going to apologize for what I did to you ever." And then Brooke stood up to her, and then she just tapped and looked at her and said, "You know, I'll be back." And I was like, I got chills watching her, because I'd be like, that psycho came after me, I would be running for the hills. But she embodied Sheila, her essence, in that moment. And I thought it was really good.
Carly, what'd you think?
I felt really similarly. I thought Kimberlyn Brown did a wonderful job. I think I would have loved to have this similarly to the way the wedding worked, where the big reveal happened there. Mm-hmm. I think having this at a Forrester family occasion would have been great. And I think one of the people that was missing from this, besides all of the other people mentioned, is Eric, because Sheila's great love in her own mind has always been Eric.
True.
And we haven't, I mean, yes, they addressed why Sheila hadn't, or rather Eric hadn't been by the hospital. But the problem is that, you know, Sheila has always wanted him to see her as, you know, the Sheila she could be. And I think that by not having Sheila, like, trying to impress him in that way, it sort of left out a bit of the character.
And that sort of leads to my next question. Josh, what did you think of how Eric finds out everything from Ridge and then is sort of a side note?
That's what I thought. I mean, Eric should have been a part of it from the very beginning. It was a huge oversight. I know that Donna's honeypot is tempting, but I don't know that it's more tempting than his granddaughter almost being killed and her husband being dead. That seemed a little off to me. If I can comment back a little bit, agree with everything about the confrontation and about Brooke and Sheila at the jail. That tap 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 on the table and saying, "You never learn, do you, Brooke?" And Kimberlyn Brown just looking icy. It's just so good. But what led up to the arrest right there beforehand, maybe I'm on an island of unpopular opinion here, but the confrontation that they had where Sheila admitted what she did, but then she threw it back at Steffi and said, you wouldn't leave it alone. I tried to come in. I tried to be a loving mother. I tried to get a relationship, but you pushed and pushed and pushed. We wouldn't be here if you could have just sat back and let me be in his life, but you had to push it. And I remember thinking right before Sheila tried to shoot Steffi and shot Finn, my response as a viewer was, Steffi needs to go. Why is she continuing to push this with someone as dangerous as Sheila Carter? I'm not saying Steffi's to blame, but Steffi and Thomas's actions and or inactions are, they're complicit in what happened here.
I think to that point, what has happened to the discussion of Thomas? You know, he knew, and that's the whole catalyst for everything, and all of a sudden he's off screen.
Yeah, and then they suddenly bring him back, and now they're going to circle the wagons around him for this secret, as they do, which is fine. But he should have been there.
For me, it's not fine. I think I'm so tired of this hypocrisy from these characters. And I know we always get that on Bold, but I think, you know what? I'm tired of no one sort of taking responsibility or anything. It's just, it's exhausting.
It's what they did with Thomas and Emma. Ridge found out about Thomas bumping Emma off the road and standing there while she died. And then he sort of made arrangements for Thomas not to have to take responsibility yet. Now, once again, Thomas didn't take responsibility for trying to kidnap Hope and take her up in that helicopter and kidnap her with that kid. He didn't take responsibility for bumping Emma off the road. He didn't take responsibility. Nobody holds him responsible for Steffi thinking that kid was hers for over a year.
I even think it would have been interesting if he said, well, you always circle the wagons around Steffi and not me, so we could see his hypocrisy. But we don't.
That'd be good.
I wonder if it's a situation where they're just setting him up as a character who gets away with everything. And this may be giving way too big of a benefit of the doubt to...
You definitely are.
The Bold and the Beautiful. But maybe they're just setting him up to be this character who keeps getting away with things until he actually does something truly, truly, truly horrific. And at that point, it becomes, we've ignored you for too long.
But Sheila did point out during her little tirade that Thomas knew... And Taylor looked at her and said, you're lying. And she's like, oh, no, no. Thomas knew all along that I had done something. And then Steffi had to reiterate that that was true. So Sheila has that knowledge.
Sheila has got the when Sheila's laughing and leaving Brooke in the room. And Catherine Kelly Lang did a great job in that scene, by the way, particularly when Sheila left and suddenly the look changed on her face from defiant to nervous, which I loved. But Sheila's, I mean, we know Kimberlyn Brown's on contract. So Sheila, the idea that Thomas knew something and that there's a setup and there are no cameras in that alley and no one knows, and this is all about Steffi's faulty memory versus the fact that no one else saw it, Sheila can totally get off on this.
Well, if you think about it, the invention of Wi-Fi cameras, digital cameras, and cell phones has sort of not been something that makes soap opera storytelling more dynamic, because the attempts to be technologically advanced often fail.
But this is also a show where they still don't think gay people are in fashion. So,
well, let's talk about some gay people and fashion, or lack thereof, or interesting gays.
A right lovely hole did there, didn't you?
Mariah and Tess got married. The good gays.
Tessa.
I always call her Tess.
I know you do. And it makes her like 100 years older when you call her that.
Well, that may be why they're both so boring as a couple. Like, the boring gays got married this week. Woo-hoo! Carly, what did you think?
I thought it was nice. I thought that it was a shame that the main conflict was who caught the bouquet.
Right? Like, where's the drama? Where is the drama at a wedding? It's a soap opera wedding with a great set. Everybody looked fabulous, but where
also,
is
like,
the drama?
Even if they had brought in, you know, the younger sister, Crystal, you know, if they had made it somehow like she was back using again, or she was like, you know, and like, I normally
Sharon could have got drunk. After she lost her husband. I'm just saying, like,
just the messy Sharon, but I see your point.
At
right?
a soap opera wedding, at a soap opera wedding, there should be one big mess and a couple side messes all going on at the same time. And did we get that this week? No, you could have had some sort of big thing happen. You could have had Sharon being a little bit drunk on the side and bumping into people or something.
Now, you could have had drunk Noah making an ass out of himself.
I'm not saying it has to be Sharon. I'm just giving an example.
I know.
There should have been a major mess and at least two side messes.
Well, on your, if you wanted to do, like, if you wanted to play the side mess, it would have been Phyllis. Phyllis, who's so upset about Diane Jenkins, so put off by it, she could have gotten drunk, and then Summer would have, that could have been messy. But I agree with you. There's
Josh,
just
Luke mess. Wants meat and two sides.
Yes, exactly. There's no mess. And to Carly, I believe the young woman's name is Morgan Obenreeder, that plays Crystal. Her comeback was a surprise to me that they brought her back, but also I had forgotten she's a good little actress good actress.
Why not have her have a one night stand with Noah and have it be weird?
That's what I thought. They keep trying to put Allie in Noah's orbit, but the chemistry was with Crystal, and she could be a good little villain. She could be a good little villain. Michael has a really cool idea of what should have happened, and I would put Crystal in this story that he's going to tell.
Oh, my thing was, well, at the end of the wedding, it was, you know, like you said, Luke, it was nice. It was pretty. And it was, you know, but
when you spend that much money on doing a wedding set and there's no mess, what is the point?
Well, right. I think that they were trying to pay lip service to trying to do justice by these characters without really giving them a story.
Two of the most boring characters on The Young and the Restless for the past 5 to 7 years, however fucking long it's been. It's been so long, I can't even remember. And they give them this wedding, and it is the epitome of what they are as a couple. Nothing happens.
Sharon and Phyllis were responsible for dropping Tessa off in the middle of the woods and leaving her to die.
Yes!
Wait, they were? I forgot that.
Yes!
I was going to say the one thing I wanted when they were opening gifts at the end, when they got to the third box, then the final box, I wanted it so bad for them to open up that box and have something from a stalker fan of Tessa's. All of a sudden the drama moves forward that she has a stalker fan and it just changes everything.
They could have been doing the lead up to this wedding and having a stalker, a shadowy figure.
And
they could have had a shadowy figure for the past 6 weeks and they still going forward through the wedding. Can you imagine how much more interesting life would have been if when Ray died, Sharon was not only dealing with her grief, but the fact that her daughter's girlfriend, fiance, had a stalker and there was a little bit of extra intrigue going on in their lives as they're still trying to go forward with a wedding during both a funeral and a stalker.
You know what this makes me think of? Do you remember at the very end of All My Children when Janet from Another Planet was Amanda's stalker?
Absolutely.
The problem is that Sheila's on The Bold and the Beautiful.
No, but I'm saying, like, what if there was like a Tessa's mother was a nut or something?
See,
like
I would make Crystal the stalker. Crystal's jealous that Tessa's life is going so well. Everything's lovely and she's got this singing career. Crystal shows back up.
It could be Noah.
It could be Noah too.
I mean, let's face it. Noah has been pretty boring himself. Noah's been pretty boring himself, and it's going to take practically an iceberg sinking the Titanic to make him interesting again. So if he was actually stalking, it might have been a little interesting.
I would agree with that. Anything.
A little more Thomas in that sense.
That young man's a good actor, but they're giving him nothing to do. Nothing. Like, he's just, I love Allie, I love that she's in town, but you do not put a boring character with a boring character.
That's
you
all
need
they're doing.
Someone dynamic with Noah.
And we've heard endless accounts of Noah's great relationship that fell apart in London, which made him had to run home to Genoa City. And they just haven't really explored that.
Well, one thing
at all.
That I've learned about The Young and the Restless and Days was that if someone has an interesting life in London, they definitely don't have one in their hometown.
You know who would have been interesting if it had been? Had his great British love been Jana, Kevin's dead ex-wife.
I agree with you. I think that would be really fun. And if Young and the and another sort of idea is if Young and the Restless had any desire to be forward or in any way interesting, Noah, this would be the time that Noah's not telling anybody who this person is. What if that person is a transgender female? What if that person is someone that would make his family question him or something? It would just, there's all kinds of interesting things you could do and actually also tell a relevant storyline.
I feel like, I'm not sure how to put this, and I'm not sure if it's going to come out diplomatically, so tell me if it doesn't. I feel like we've reached a stage in soaps where having a crazy gay person or a psycho gay person, we have enough gays in soaps that having a psycho gay person will makes things interesting. Not that they need to be like a Leo type thing, which he's not really crazy on days, but he is definitely a manipulative. It's nice to see manipulative gays. We're not back in the days of Noah and Jake, where everybody's a good guy, or Bianca, everybody's a good guy. That's what Mariah and Tess still are. Mm-hmm. But we're evolving out of that because we have characters like Leo. I'm not sure that bringing on a transgender character as a stalker psycho is necessarily a good thing. I mean, at the same time, the transgender storyline on General Hospital that's going on, it's not very dynamic. So I feel like there has to be something that's a little bit more of a balance, but I don't know that I want a psycho trans character
That's not at all what I meant. What I meant was that because everything other than Mariah and Tessa, because they're the only people who represent any orientation besides straight, I'm not saying to have this person be psycho. I was just saying the fact that Noah hasn't told anyone who this person is might be because he's nervous, because he doesn't know how his family would respond that he was dating a transgender woman, and that that Victor and Nicholas and all of these folks would have to figure out how to think about it.
That
and
could
that
be
actually
a good
could be a relevant storyline.
That could be a good storyline.
I think that's why there was
something different.
I feel like there was no drama at the wedding because it was a gay wedding, and it had to be. It had to be go off without a hitch. And
well,
we
learned
like,
from Days of Our Lives that a gay wedding does not have to be boring.
Yeah,
because
Craig
and Leo.
We're talking about two different styles of shows, though.
But this is the show that has written this couple from almost day one. There might have been a couple of months where things were not boring. Good gays. They've written this couple as the boring good gays the entire run of this couple.
They've turned them into good people after they came out. The transformation of Mariah from fierce person who could not love anybody, who pushed people away, came out and suddenly became this wonderful person. Same thing with Tessa. She came to town. She was homeless. Nikki and her befriended each other. Never really took advantage of Nikki and her money, right? And then she found her way to Mariah after she was dating Noah, and then she became a better person. So it seems like the transformation happened after, which
Even
I wish there was.
Apparently, gay love makes you both good and boring.
Apparently.
Wouldn't it be interesting if, like, for example, Crystal had come back and said, you know, I'm using again my drug dealers trying to blackmail me, or is trying to, like, I've got a debt, I need money. And then, what's her name? Tessa starts stealing from Nikki or something. Like,
something.
At least it could be
anything.
Some
Tessa
moral
in
complexity.
Nikki's, when is Tessa in Nikki's orbit anymore?
Well, they're not.
That's
but right.
Sharon and Nick have Newman money. So
Sharon had better
stuff
after four Newman divorces.
Thank you. One of the great unexplored things to me is Tessa and Nikki. I loved Tessa as Nikki's assistant. I thought Nikki responded to Tessa because she understood what it was like not to always have money, always have stability. And I thought that relationship was great. And when they completely went away from it, it's just untapped potential.
I also agree that there's something about the assistant or paid companion to the wealthy older woman that is a very YNR trope. Not saying that Tessa would have to become Jill, but there's something that is an archetype, or that is a trope that I think we forget about. Could be great.
If The Young and the Restless was smart to try and pull two different storylines in together, they would have the transgender character that Josh was suggesting come and be Nikki's assistant, and Noah falls in love with her. You could still have a scheming character potentially who might set her sights on Noah initially while being his grandmother's assistant, and yet they still have a fall in love story. I mean, it could work.
Absolutely,
it could. Great, and I also think that, you know, Nikki being sort of the, you know, grand dame of Genoa City could see herself as being, you know, like, oh, I'm giving this person a chance when this person is actually really qualified, and sort of like cause, maybe this is a bit ambitious, but cause people to examine their own prejudices in the storyline as no, is this Noah and this fictional assistant fall in love?
Before we move on to General Hospital, going around the circle real quick, thoughts on Phyllis, Jack, and Diane? Mike, you first.
Oh, fire. Absolute fire. Susan Walters, I could watch her for 40 minutes every day. I love the dynamic that she's just sitting there and letting Phyllis do all the crazy. Phyllis, to me, is coming off a lot like Carly Corinthos lately. So to watch Phyllis, you know, I know they want you to root for Phyllis and Jack and Summer and Kyle, but I'm totally Team Diane. And her dynamic with Michael is amazing.
I think that could be really interesting if they go the Michael-Diane chemistry route.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren will...
I can't wait.
She will cut a bitch. She will cut a bitch.
If she did, if Lauren and Phyllis teamed up to take down Diane...
I don't think that Lauren even has to team up with Phyllis. Lauren could do it one hand and not scratch a nail.
Yeah, it actually feels like... going off what everybody said, I say this a lot, where I feel like the writers... are wanting us to root for one person, but that's not always the case. And I'm totally Team Diane, but it almost seems like Diane and Phyllis is an unfair fight. I feel like Diane's toying with Phyllis, and Phyllis isn't up to the challenge.
A problem with the writers, because historically Phyllis should be up to the challenge.
Sure, no, I agree with you.
No,
what happened at the end of Friday's episode, where Jack leaves Phyllis and he's about to leave the hotel and Diane is sitting there and they go through this conversation. At the very end, she says, "So how's Phyllis?" It's like, it's awfully convenient, seems to me, that you all are ramping up right now. Almost seems like she's marking her territory. Good night, Jack. And
I
just
love that.
It plants that seed that why did Phyllis and Jack sleep together all of a sudden? It was so good. I'm with Michael. I could watch Susan Walters read the phone book. Her facial expressions and just the quiet, manipulative calm. Plus the shift that she did with Diane did with Michael. I agree. It was so nice to see that. And it was so nice to see Michael go, Phyllis, not your lesson to teach. Basically,
I
thought it was all very well
haircut.
Done.
But that's beside the point.
I think the other thing
in a realm where we have talked about Amelia Hindley and various other actresses' hair over the years, I'm just saying,
you leave Christian
as much
LeBlanc
as
alone.
I love Christian LeBlanc, do not get me wrong. I love Michael the character. I love Christian LeBlanc. He's an amazing actor and talented person. I need him to go back to his short haircut, because with that white hair and the short haircut that he used to have with the spiky, it would be so fucking hot.
I know, but he still looks like a silver fox.
How great it is that we have, like, Diane's hair is sort of silvery, mm-hmm. and Christian's hair is, like, white, and it's gorgeous, and it's styled, and it's impeccably done.
It is impeccably done. It's impeccably done, but I prefer Michael Baldwin, Christian LeBlanc, in the shorter, mm-hmm. like, spiky hair, and... not many guys can pull off longer white hair, and he does it okay. But it would take him to next level of hotness on this show, and if it was shorter and spiky.
But I think he's doing a play, and that's why his hair is the length it is.
Is he doing Cat on the Hot Tin Roof?
Yes, he's doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
When it's done, let's go back to short hair. Let's talk a little bit about General Hospital. Josh Kelly, former One Life to Live star, is joining the show. He will be appearing later this month, considering at the 22nd, we're pretty much getting close to him arriving. Not a lot of details about the character, but he will be interacting with Dante, Sam, and Britt, or his character will be. Let's talk about Liz. We went through all of this for sleepwalking. Josh, you had posited long ago that you thought that Liz was doing it to herself. And yeah. in a scenario in which General Hospital is writing a character where... like, you have a split personality, something may have happened, something may have broke within Liz. Yeah, you can understand. But at least this week, for this week, because remember, I do not read spoilers ahead of time, the explanation is sleepwalking. I was so disappointed.
Okay. So, dear Soap Jesus, I apologize for not being more specific when I asked for a storyline for Rebecca Herbst, because in no way and in no fashion did I ask for nighttime Lizzie Beth. I did not ask for this.
Coughing, and, sneezing, hacking Elizabeth.
I can't. There were so many different ways that this could go. Never terribly thrilled with this path, but there were so many ways that this could go. And whether this is sleepwalking or some sort of drugging or whatever, it's still nighttime Hope revisited on General Hospital, except she's doing it to herself and not doing it to other people. It's
at
just
least nighttime Hope involved Princess Gina, if I'm remembering correctly. Did it not?
Yeah, nighttime Hope, and then she was committing crimes, like she was
right
vandalizing, and she was. I mean, it was bad, but at least there was something happening. I don't know what Rebecca Herbst did. I don't know if she took Melody Thomas Scott's parking space on some other show and then they're punishing her here. I don't understand. It's just, this is, it's dumb. It's dumb. It's dumb. It's dumb. It's ungood. It's ungood. It's just not good. It's just awful.
Carly, what did you think of how this story, I mean, this may not be the climax. They might throw at us another chapter in the Liz storyline, but for now it is sleepwalking. What'd you think?
It's so bad. I mean, there's nothing that I can say that hasn't already been said. It's terrible.
Terrible.
It's really terrible.
And what they're in, and Finn is coming off like a condescending, controlling, possessive dick. And I don't really understand why they're writing him like that if they're trying to get us to buy that Finn and Liz are equivalent to Franco and Liz, which I think that's what they're trying to sell us. And it's not, ain't nobody buying it. But it's like, I don't know what Finn is doing. Why is Finn? That would be my question.
Mike,
I can't ask Cheeseburger, why is Finn?
Mike, I know you struggle with General Hospital just in general. What did you think of this last week's show?
Well, to me, it's like Mace sweeps, and everything on General Hospital seems to have a good start and then a stall. So, like, when we talk about Brooklyn and Chase, and I know that you're not a fan of Chase, but I'm just going to say these two were going somewhere, and there's been no fallout from the fact that Brooklyn had to give up a baby and Chase was helping her, and the two of them are acting like two teenagers who don't want to pretend that they like each other. So that's stalled. And then we've got Michael, who decides that this is the hill he wants to die on with Sonny, when Sonny has, I don't know, killed his father, and then he killed, who else did he kill? He killed some other Quartermain.
Michael was,
but in any event,
he was responsible for shooting Michael and having Michael shot in the head. I mean, that was because of his business.
Right. But there was another recent death. Oh, Julian. He killed Julian. So, you know, so that wasn't a problem, apparently. And then, you know, so as much as I love Michael and Sonny at war, this is not the way I would actually choose to do it. Willow and Michael, are we rooting for Nina to crush them? Of course
yes.
We are. Absolutely. Bobby and Nina was fun. But
that was good.
That was one moment out of an entire week or a month of sweeps, and it's like, and now we're focused on Hat Daddy again.
It's
not hard to write for legacy characters the way you know it's like they're trying to create a whole new Bible.
Now they've got this reporter named Grant who is, I don't know, writing stories, who's not going anywhere. They've got some random photographer chasing Sasha. And they've got this new guy coming on under contract. And it's like, Jesus, Merritt, is there anybody on this show without, like, it's, we keep talking about how big the cast is, but it keeps growing. And the actors are like, hey, I'm on contract on General Hospital. It's like,
it's
really?
It's more bloated than a rat corpse on the subway in July. It's
absolutely.
Here's the thing about General Hospital.
That's
for me.
That's pretty bloated.
It is.
For me this last week, General Hospital, I agree with you on the bloated cast. I feel like you could kill off Brando, Sasha, Brando's mother, all the reporters, all this other shit.
Gladys alone.
All these other characters that really don't contribute to the character, mythos, or heritage of General Hospital, you could just get rid of them all. But for me, I felt like watching General Hospital was like watching something that just isn't tuned right and everything is just off. The gaslighting turning out to be sleepwalking. If you had to choose a way for Elizabeth to be torturing herself to end up at sleepwalking, feels off. It's not a good it doesn't make me as a viewer think that I have made a good investment in my time in Liz's story, because it's not a good payoff. Well, Sonny versus Michael, which in theory should be really good. And as Mike already pointed out, I mean, Sonny's no saint, but here's the thing. Michael's motivation is to do it for the Corinthos name instead of the fucking Quartermain name. It is a punch in the gut to longtime viewers when General Hospital makes a rivalry about Sonny versus Michael over a Corinthos name instead of a story about a son who is reclaiming his actual name that he's abandoned, thrown in the trash, and then yet we have to deal with him in ELQ shit. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to be the person who's going to redeem the name of the Corinthos family, get the fuck out of ELQ and just don't put him there. Make Michael the next mobster. Is that what's happening? No. Then we go on to the fact that we had Alexis and Woe Harmony, which could have had a good,
better
culmination.
Better than Yo Harmony. That, at least the character was written in an interesting way.
They could have written a really good lesbian storyline for Alexis and Harmony and still had all of the drama involved in her not being Willow's mother. You could have still done it without all of this craziness. And yet they chose to do a climax for this story that did not actually contribute to the quality and longevity of the show. Meanwhile, we have Marshall's storyline. We have spent how many months? Good year, it feels like, at least. Maybe not quite that long. I don't remember when he started.
It feels like four.
It feels like we have been dealing with Marshall's secret for years. And the explanation is that he was a protester and ended up in a facility. That is his big secret.
Did they ever explain what he was protesting? I don't remember.
I don't care. No, I don't care.
They probably did, but I missed it because it's
the
just
other
so boring.
Part too is the story that really had legs was Trina, Spencer, Esme, and Cameron. And now that Trina has been arrested for like at least a month waiting to go to trial, it's stalled and it's become Ryan telling Esme to seduce Nicholas, who I have to tell you, I'm struggling with Nicholas as a character right now.
They have not been writing Nicholas in character since they brought him back from the dead.
Right.
Dumb.
And now like Cameron and Spencer are in
and
on
Sam,
the fact
and Sam don't
are trying
Sam.
Right to trap Esme. Is she this good? Is this 18-year-old girl that good that three adults can't figure out what you're doing? How are you going to make this story end in a way that it's been worth the wait? Because it's not going to happen.
You can't. It's been too long.
The only thing that possibly could make this story is if they somehow get Ryan out of the facility, but who knows what the explanation for that's going to be.
Yeah.
It could be completely preposterous as what we're watching in these other scenes. The other side note that
this kid is Felicia's, I'm going to absolutely flip out.
I really hope not.
I want to make one more point about General Hospital and how everything feels off. Very few of the pairings on General Hospital are actually clicking. It's really sad when I am more interested in my head fan fiction about Portia and Jordan having a lesbian affair and Alexis possibly being in the middle of it than what I'm seeing on screen.
So you have a magic TV.
I'm saying this is totally fan fiction because I see more chemistry between Portia and Jordan than I do with them and either of their men.
I agree.
I'm sorry, Josh. Really one fast, thing I want to say
okay,
is
do it.
No, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize. Oh, I just want to say, while we're on Alexis, her running a newspaper is not her thing.
That's no.
It's awful. Okay, Josh, go.
Just really fast, to piggyback on what Luke was saying, sweeps. Whether you like Tessa and Mariah or not, big wedding, Kyle's back, Summer's back, Diane Jenkins, Bold and the Beautiful, Sheila's comeuppance, all of the stuff around Finn's death and Steffi, Days of Our Lives has 42 storylines culminating in May sweeps, and then 42 storylines that are starting from those. General Hospital is nothing's happening. They've forgotten it's May sweeps. And just to say one last thing about My Lizzybeth, if you wanted to make this a fun, interesting, dynamic story, the person that should be doing this is Heather Weber.
That actually Heather would Weber be really good.
Going after her because of Franco. Mm-hmm. That's how you do this. And I don't understand. Like, I almost like they mistimed the shows. And
but that's what I'm
saying.
April
this or
show,
June and not May.
But it's not that. It's not the timing for May sweeps. They do not have the excuse of having had the Olympics preempt
I agree
them.
With you.
They yeah. know on a calendar when the fucking dates are for May sweeps. If they couldn't have figured out long ago to be laying the Easter eggs for a Heather Weber and have her be the one that shows up, that's on them. Like
I agree with
Dan
you.
Dan and Chris have, and Dan have, get, well, have we, other than the fact out. That they don't pay attention to their own history, they can actually deliver some really good storylines. But the past 3 months, maybe four, ever since Peter, like, I do not want Peter back. I'm going to be very specific on this. I do not want Peter back. I do not want Peter back. That having been said, since the culmination of that storyline, everything has felt off. Nothing has made sense. And everything is just, it's like you're driving down a road with one tire on a rim. That is what General Hospital is now. Driving down a tire, and you have three tires and one on a rim, and that's all it is, and that is General Hospital.
I can't even say
it's not a good rim
it's
either.
It's 5 steps from being good anymore, because I can't see the five steps that would piece
it's a good
together.
Mile from being
but
good.
But if you had Heather tormenting Liz and the kid who was talking to Jeff and his new wife out in wherever the fuck they live. And then Jeff finds out that Heather is tormenting Liz. And then that brings Jeff back to his daughter.
They'd have to finally bring on the mother.
Yep.
That's casting that I could get behind.
But your point is that it almost writes. I don't mean it writes itself. That's dismissive. And I don't mean it like that. But there's so many organic things. That could, Carly, this goes back to a point you were making earlier. You don't have to create drama. Drama exists.
But they undermine their own drama. Once again, Carly, Sam, and Liz should not be okay with each other. Mm-mm. Carly and Alexis should not be okay with each other. Everybody is becoming friends. Now, it's not as boring as The Young and the Restless, where everybody is like, ooh, kumbaya, but it's getting close.
And Ava should be relishing the moment she could take the stand and talk about Nina and what she did to her. She shouldn't be relishing that moment to take Wiley away from her.
It shouldn't be a best friend, them teaming up against Carly. Why is Ava and Nina's relationship about Carly? Why isn't Ava versus Nina? Now, granted, I will give them credit. They did give a nod to it in the last couple weeks. I don't remember when it was, when someone brought up the fact that didn't she do this to you? It was mentioned to Ava. Mm-hmm. But that's not good enough. You can't have a baby ripped from your body and just have a one-off after all these years of passing them off as BFFs. No.
It would be great if Ava was somehow working a long con, but it's too late.
Yeah.
Yep.
It would be a long con if Heather Weber and Ryan were somehow teaming up. That would be a long con.
If somehow Esme was Heather Weber and Ryan's child, that would be interesting.
That would be freaky. Let's talk about
have
some
to have
other.
Some, have to have some ova on ice in order for that.
That is very true. That's very true, Carly.
Let's talk about Days of Our Lives, because a lot took place on the show this last week. Well, right. On a show that knows how to do sweeps. Boy, buckle up. The devil. I'm going to just make my petty comment, and then we can talk about everything that you guys all loved about the devil. but they wasted an opportunity by Trip not just being dead. Okay, my petty comment out of the way.
I actually agree.
They should have just let him die, sacrifice himself. He could have forever been a hero to those in Salem who recognize his sacrifice. He should have just stayed dead. Josh, what did you think of the culmination? What did you think of Ben and Sierra versus the devil and the baby, and then the squeal that we heard in Arizona from Boston when Bo appeared?
So, it's a good culmination. Again, this is whether we loved or hated the 9-month arc of the storyline, I have to give props because there's not anything on Soaps that's 9 months long anymore. So whether you loved it or you hated it, it was constructed in that way. I thought that the culmination was good. I thought that the family at the top of the church tower was good. I thought Lucas Adams, when he got the devil in him and turned to the camera and started talking, I was like, there's some fire. Okay, wait a minute. We're capable of fire. There was fire. I thought, okay, there's some good stuff happening there. When Trip threw himself out the window, I mean, I don't know that I thought he was going to be dead, but
he could have been. He could have just stayed there.
My hope is.
No, you need a character like Trip. I know you don't like to hear that, but that's the way it is.
You have to have characters like Trip. You have to have characters that are
Dewey.
Even. Yes.
Dewey.
React off of the crazy. Yeah. You have to have middle of the road characters. But Trip has
You need middle of road characters that are actually interesting. But middle Trip of the road characters that are not interesting, we don't need.
But Trip has an evil past. And my hope is that somehow we get this blend of Trip moving forward. Because even after the reveal, you get this idea where Trip says to Allie, you said you loved me, but do you love Chanel? And I know you can love two people. And then Raven Bowens walks into Chanel and the look between her and Lindsay Arnold as Allie is just chemistry laden. And so I just thought, and then wah, wah, Trip loses again. But Trip could be the doctor at the hospital who then becomes a little sketchy around the edges because he has that in his past. So I'm going to sit back and wait for that. But the rest of it, Sierra and Ben and all of that and the baby, it was very, very sweet. But then, Beauregard, Brady, who come to save the day. When that light came in and Sierra turned around and said, Daddy, and I was like, literally chills and Peter Reckle on my screen and just making me so happy. And I know there's some back and forth online about what Ghost Bo said to Ben about, I know what you've been through. You've become a better man. That's not what real Bo would say. This is what Heavenly Bo would say. Heavenly Bo would be there to comfort Sierra and to help Ben understand that he can be a good father. Real Bo would be like, what in the actual fuck is going on here, princess? And would do that. So I'm okay with Ghost Bo, Heavenly Bo saying that stuff. This other part that I want to comment on before I let it go is Tamara Braun and Stephen Nichols crying about Trip broke me. Stephen Nichols, I have not seen him that engaged in a really long time. And he...
It might have been Stefan on General Hospital.
It could be. The crying. And Tamara Braun does grief better than almost anybody. And when she went after Kayla, I was like, that's what
her hands and neck start moving. And you know, you're in for, you are in for some good crying.
And when Stephen Nichols, I'm sorry, when Stephen Earl Johnson looks up and they're over Tripp's dead body and the glow happens and Tripp goes, and once again, Kayla has said someone's dead when they're not. And he sees Bo. And you get that thing of the best friends, and he's seeing his best friend again.
It was so lovely.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
It was so good.
It wasn't like this Kung Fu Barbie coming down and collecting Mike, right? It was way better.
Reels this week. I thought that was lovely, and it just gave me goosebumps. Loved it.
Before I go to Carly on her thoughts on the culmination, I just, as you were talking about Tamara Braun's crying and how she does it so flawlessly, it begs the question, is she the female Jonathan Jackson? Carly, what did you think of the culmination?
I thought it was good. I thought the way that the Sierra and Bo thing was shot looked kind of cheap. and I know that they're working on a shoestring budget, I thought that it could have looked a little more like they were talking to each other rather than just Bo waiting 30 seconds to respond.
I think the timing was a little shoddy.
The editing was a little.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the baby thing was cute. I'm really glad the devil's gone. What else? Yeah, Trip could have stayed dead for all that I care. I know that you need a character like that, but I just I don't find the character interesting.
No.
What else? Yeah, it was good. It was engaging.
Mike, so I'm going to start with you on this and then go back to Carly and Josh. Mm-hmm. Was this devil storyline worth it?
Well, that's a good question.
Worth everything that we had to invest in it?
Yes. I would say the 2 days of days on a Monday and a Tuesday after all the months, I guess you're equating the question to what I was just saying about General Hospital, but I would say, yeah, I would say that they took every story thread and put together the family. They brought together characters that had been involved with the original story and with this story, and you had families brought together in a crisis. And for 2 days, I was at the edge of my seat. And for 2 days after it was over, I was like, whew, I'm exhausted. So
Carly,
to me, it was worth it. But I will say that I had my druthers with the devil storyline, and we've talked about it endlessly. But the culmination of the 2 days was definitely, it was a good, that's how you do a soap climax, people. I mean, you might not have liked the story, but everybody was involved. And then you got the nice little surprise of Bo and Sierra reuniting, and you got Bo and Steve reunited. And it's just like, I was happy with the way it went and considering the direction it was going.
Carly, was the 9-month storyline worth it to revisit the iconic devil storyline?
I think it should have been 6. I thought it was worth it overall. I don't think on a day-by-day basis I was watching as much as I would have if it was a little more chopped up, you know, and a little more, like, more storylines rather than just this one.
Josh, how about you?
I do think it was worth it, and I just jotted down something. So as a result of the devil storyline, and this is moving forward after it, the aftermath, we're about to get Sammy returning, and that Sammy, Lucas, EJ mm-hmm. thing where Lucas and Chad know that EJ didn't do this thing, but Sammy was convinced that it was him and not Lucas, has propelled that storyline and it put EJ in Belle's orbit. Then we have Jan and Sean, and that's a devil thing. Ben and Sierra only got pregnant because a possessed Marlena told him he could be a father. Chanel, Johnny, Trip, Allie, all that is moving forward. They pushed that after the devil was gone. Paulina, Lonnie, TR, Abe, Eli, all of that was impacted because Chanel was spellbound by the devil at the original wedding and told all the secrets. Mm-hmm. So all of these storylines moving forward are from the possession. So whether it went on too long, and I agree that it did go on too long, all of these stories will be what propels us from May sweeps to November. And so I do think the fallout is worth it.
Let's talk about another storyline.
Well, what about you? What do you think?
If I'm being diplomatic, I would say that Carly's point of 6 versus 9 months would have been better. Mm-hmm. I still don't feel that I understand what the motivation for the baby was. Like, watching it, I'm still like, really? This is it? For just the baby obsession. I think, Mike, you and I were texting this last week, and your point was, and it made so much more sense, why wouldn't he be more obsessed with the baby that he created between Jan and Sean than this baby?
Yeah, that's
baby,
been a sticking point for
like,
me.
Like, this baby that he didn't even help create. Like, if the whole fact that Jan got pregnant because the devil was involved, in my mind, if that had happened so much earlier, and the obsession was then about taking care of, like, doing that baby, that would make more sense to me.
Yeah.
So, like,
at the same time, though, I could also see if there had been, like, you know, a baby, like, from Marlena's lineage or something like that, you know? I think there were some beats that were left out. Like, Marlena played a role, but it wasn't enough.
I think that this storyline gave us some fantastic moments. The ones that will stick out in my mind will mostly be Susan as standing up to the devil and Devil Doug. Those are going to be the two things that, for me as a viewer, when I look back on this, hopefully a decade from now, and we're talking about the fact that the devil has returned to Salem for the third time.
Nope, we can make it 20 years from now.
Okay, whatever it is. Whenever we're looking back on this and we're thinking about the second iteration, it will be Devil Doug and it will be Susan standing up to the devil. For me, it will be Marlena too.
I mean, she tossed Sean across that Thanksgiving table, and I will remember that too.
Just to add in, I think whether we like this or not, I think one of the goals here was to make Ben and Sierra this generation's Sean and Marlena. That was it was love conquers all.
Well said.
And I think that's where it's going. John was a pawn and he was a criminal and he did all these things and not like Ben did necessarily, but I think that's where they're going with this.
I still, the only other thing that I'll say about it is I don't get the devil's interest in Demira. It still doesn't make sense to me. But
just to cause chaos.
It's not a perfect...
Just to cause chaos is not an excuse for a motivation in a storyline for me.
But that it's the devil. The whole point of the devil is to cause chaos. That's what Marlena did the first time around. There was a point, but it was also she just liked causing chaos.
On the fact that you believe the devil exists because you're a Christian. I consider myself agnostic. But if you're even going
okay,
by,
this
if you're going by,
that.
If
you're,
you're well, no, what I'm
show.
Saying is, if you are going to by the biblical standard of a devil, the devil always has a motivation. Just causing chaos is not a motivation.
Well, we will agree to disagree.
There's another aspect that, you know, and I did rave about a couple of days. There are some wonky aspects of days that I felt were very rushed. And one was that TR came to make the movie and the movie was never talked about or
made.
The
movie with the devil didn't make sense either.
Right. And then, you know, then all of a sudden TR revealed himself really quickly and Lonnie shot him. Bing, bang, boom, dead. End of story. So there was no buildup for
Paulina.
It makes
me wonder, did William Christian like have a different, like another commitment or something?
I don't know. It just happened to wrap up to me really quickly. And then, you know, then we've got, and I might have mentioned this before, we've got Clyde dating Nancy, which to me is completely, not be happening. But
we're going to move from that cringeworthy thing to the Lonnie shooting TR and Paulina claiming credit. And we talked about this in the last couple episodes about Paulina as I personally do not believe that Paulina as the victim who went through everything to protect Lonnie for all those years would just suddenly fall for TR again.
Yeah.
The show tried to explain that away. The show tried to explain that away with Paulina in the room with Lonnie at the police station this last week. So my question is, do you guys buy the rationale that was given by Paulina for her falling susceptible? I personally don't believe it, but Carly, you first.
You know, if we had gotten flashbacks of like young Paulina and young TR and like seen something that like could have explained like what the, like if she was like almost like they were like addicted to each other when they were young and there's some sort of like maybe he manipulated her so she wanted to believe or something, like,
well, he's an abuser. He probably did. There was probably that mental aspect, you know,
exactly. But if
physical.
We saw it, if we, because we were told that this happened and then we saw the Paulina that we know and love behaving nothing like the Paulina that we know and love, if we could have seen some of that either now or like a one short flashback, I feel like it might have made more sense. As it stands, I don't get it.
Josh?
I both agree and disagree. So I agree that we should have seen more, even just if it was conversation at the very beginning about what was going on with TR and Paulina back in the day. At the very beginning of this storyline, Paulina explained that TR was her first love and that she was devastated by what happened, and that the abuse and that kind of stuff. And then at the tail end of this, we get the basic explanation of battered woman syndrome. And when I say, I don't mean basic in that way, just we got the explanation, which we should have been getting all the way through. Mm-hmm. That would have made this easier to digest. But the reality is that this is a thing, that people do become addicted to each other. Battered woman syndrome is a thing, and it's not just about the battering, it's about the relationship, and that people, it's not so easy to leave, not just because you feel stuck, but also because there was a reason you fell in love with this person to begin with. And people can relate violence to love, and sometimes things are comfortable and they're familiar, even if they're miserable. In this space, Paulina had been left at the altar by Abe. Lonnie had rejected her. Even Chanel had rejected her. She was kind of alone. And this familiar presence, as toxic as he was, showed back up. And I believe that that's where they were going. The problem is that they didn't actually explain it well enough, or have those moments where someone was talking to Paulina, or Paulina was talking to herself.
She was going to therapy, and I think after Marlena's, betrayed her, if they'd kept that aspect of it up and have let us see the struggle she's having, that could have really been helpful.
I get that you can have the toxic connection and have someone return. I totally understand that. It happens. My thing is, the story that this character, the fundamental foundation of this story or this character, that as it was introduced to us and as played out for many months before it was finally revealed that to Lonnie that Paulina was her mother, was that she had done everything in her life for the past 20 to 30 years to make it so that she would never, ever, ever be in that position by a man again. The therapy element with Marlena was very good. They needed to have that. That was then sort of self-sabotaged. I mean, if you're going to put it that way. But for me as a viewer, the introduction of TR and the time that he has been on screen, for her to flip as fast mm-hmm. as she has, with after having built up 20 to 30 years of resistance and repeating to herself, this is never going to happen to me again, they did not give enough motivation. They did not give us enough of an explanation for her to just flip on a dime, because for me as a viewer, after investing all this time in a character that I've really enjoyed since day one of her arrival and I bought into her story, they flipped everything on a dime and did not give an explanation for it.
I agree that the lack of explanation is a key component to this.
If Big Mama was living in the house with her, she could have set her straight
agree with you. But what I also think is that there are lots of people in our lives who we know in a certain way and don't know the way they were before. So where it would feel like somebody's flipping on a dime when their history says otherwise, because we also don't know what Paulina's relationships have been subsequently. We don't know anything. There's a lot of backstory, and
if they were going to give her the motivation to flip on a dime, they should have given us an explanation for why she's doing it.
I agree with you, but I do think that it explains why Paulina's trying to take the blame for Lonnie.
Fast rush paced thing, if I'm only looking at it from a standpoint of Paulina's motivation for protecting Lonnie, sure, I can buy it, because she's now going to try and make up for what she didn't do for all those years. Sure. But the problem is there's a giant chasm between where she was and where she's now in the police station that is like no living character can jump that chasm without falling into its depths.
This is something that I know as storytellers we all deal with. As an editor, I know this is something that I come across with. It's come across daily. It's basic show, not tell. And we weren't even told enough.
We weren't
told a bit, but we weren't shown half of what we needed to be shown.
What's crazy about that is I think last year I made a comment about Days doing too much telling.
Yeah.
And this time there wasn't telling or showing. It just
be careful
flipped.
What you wish for, Soap Moses, is what
there was showing. There
well,
wasn't
it
telling.
Actually it speaks to you and Carly's opinion of the devil storyline being 6 months versus 9 months. You could have taken that 3 months to develop other.
I think you're right.
And kind of I pull love, back on the other. Listen, do not get me wrong. I love that Ron is at Days of Our Lives.
Yeah,
and I absolutely. Know that when it comes to us on this podcast, that I tend to be the person who is either most hard on him or is the person who falls out of love with the current version of a storyline the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Ron's greatest Achilles heel for all the soaps that he's written is he always has one too many storylines, and because of it, something falters in the top two storylines. And I love him. I think mm-hmm. that he's great for this show. I think that he is a talented writer. He comes up with some genius stuff. He has entertained me for years, but he needs to cut back that fourth storyline.
He needs to have that person that they're saying, you know what, put one thing down. Like, what is
exactly.
Take one
that,
thing
that
off
is what that is what Ron needs, because if he didn't have that fourth or fifth or sometimes sixth storyline, there would have been time for the development of Paulina as a character in the meantime to be able to do what we're doing and making this story feel right the whole way through.
I agree. Now, what I do think going forward, if they go here, could be very interesting, is the idea that Lonnie, who has gone on the other side of the law multiple times with Kristen, mm-hmm. has now pulled out a gun and shot someone, her father, in cold blood. And that, to me, having this side of Lonnie where they're trying to play her at times like she's the police officer. She's a police officer. It's Eli, really. And this week notwithstanding, but Eli has a head injury. So whatever he's saying this week is forgiven. But Lonnie is not so straight and narrow.
Straight and narrow.
I agree with you, but
this is the one time she wants to tell the truth. And then Eli is the one that wants to lie.
I agree with you. But my point is that she's never been mm-hmm. held to the fire for that.
No.
And so I feel like this is an opportunity to extract her from the police force and have her be like a private detective or something like that.
Interesting. The thing is, because we've seen for years, all of these Salem cops have conflicts of interests and, you know, sort of go on both sides of the law. Lonnie, we've seen do that, but sometimes we hold them. I think we've held some of the cops in the past to a higher standard. And I think that, I don't know, I think that I would like to see her be able to go off book and
I would too.
Do her own thing.
I think we're missing a private detective in Salem, and I really feel like Lonnie deciding that she couldn't be a straight and narrow police officer, getting her private detective license and working with Bell or some other attorney.
And that would put her at odds with Eli,
yes.
who is straight and narrow. And also she and Bell could have like a lawyer detective agency, like two in one.
Yes.
Like it's and like shampoo and conditioner.
Days has always had too many cops for the amount of drama that they have going on. There's no reason why we have Lonnie, Eli, Rafe, and any other random cop
Sean,
on a given day.
Sean,
right. There's no reason for four cops. They could have two, three, and have like day players in the background looking like cops. But like there's too many cops on Days. Going around the circle real quick, because I want to get everybody's quick take on this. Sarah has most of her memory back, but not all. Mike?
I think it's a good twist. I didn't think when she got the antidote that it would be all, you know, unicorns and roses. So I'm pretty happy with this development that Xander has to be the one to hurt her all over again. And then
Carly?
She's going to be, now that Eric's back, you know, Eric is Eric.
I thought it was okay. I would like to see Sarah start moving forward with her life.
Yes.
And I was sort of like, all right, we did this already, but yeah, I'll take it.
Josh?
I think I agree with Carly that it needs to move forward. I like the fact, what I like about it is it's giving Paul Telfer, Lindsay Godfrey, and Suzanne Rogers meaty material to play, but I'm ready for Sarah to move forward and to decide whether she's Will, I assume we're going to go around the world with her and Xander for a little while, and that's fine. That's what you do with couples who should
adding
end up together.
For good measure.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm glad Lindsay Godfrey's back. Glad she's on my screen. It's time to move forward. It's time to get her back in the hospital and figure out if they're going to keep her in sort of a delusional state, or if they're not going to let her just play it that way. Let her try to figure, maybe it would be interesting to let her try to figure out her life without having this 2 years of memory. That could be interesting to try to piece it together.
As we wrap things up, for those of you who loved the original four co-hosts on The View, Meredith Vieira, Joy Behar, Star Jones, and Debbie Matenopoulos, they will be reuniting on the 25th of this month. So tune into The View for that. Finally, as we wrap up today's show, we want to take a moment to remember Marnie Schulenburg, who played Allison Stewart on As the World Turns. She passed away this last week. Our thoughts are with her family. It's never easy to lose a family member, and it's especially difficult when they are this young and there are young children involved. So our thoughts definitely go out to that family.
Absolutely.
May her memory be a blessing, as we say.
Absolutely.
We would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Josh is at DrJoshua09. Carly is at Carly A. Silver. And Mike is at MPJ24. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.